Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man, otherwise known as Bruce.
And we are coming at you with what could potentially be our final episode of the children's classic sports ball movie, The Sandlot.
Killing me, Smalls.
The lot that is full of sand. Scotty Smalls doesn't know, and his continuance of the tale of him not knowing how that played out into the later years in his road trip across Europe will perhaps be a series of episodes we do at another time. Not likely. Honestly, there's not a lot in those movies to really dive into.
I don't know. I could find some things, but I understand now you are grown up enough to take issue with it.
Yeah, I don't really take issue with it, I guess. It's just not a lot to it. Worst twins ever. Last we left our heroes, they were trying to get the ball away from the gigantic monster dog.
And they'd gone through several different plans. None of them have worked.
Many erector sets and many destroyed things. Almost a destroyed small child.
And several of the children may have almost accidentally gotten blown up from vacuum cleaners.
Yeah,
you know, vacuum cleaners are fire explosive kind of things.
It's working. It's working. Boom.
Scotty does kind of look like Anakin Skywalker, doesn't he?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
So they've gone through several of these plans. None of them have worked. And they were just about ready to give up hope. They all go home for the night. Benny, the leader of the group, he has a dream where Babe Ruth comes into his room from his closet. There's no problem with that.
No strangeness on that one.
And tells him that heroes are remembered, but legends never die. You know, if he really wants to be great, he's got to do something legendary.
Legendary. I want to make a side comment about the amazingness that is the attempts and failures, right? Because as we will see, spoiler alert, towards the end of the movie, that the right answer all along was to just go talk to the old man who owned the house.
But isn't that like if you were like one of the English teachers, a high school English teacher, wouldn't you say that like it's like the deeper meaning of that is like talking about like the moon project, like the Apollo program, you know? You know, we tried 1,000 different ways to find out how you could write something in space using a pen, when all along the Russians just used a normal number 2 pencil.
Yeah, which is actually a bunch of BS. We also use number 2 pencils in space, but it's that thing, like the I'm gonna figure out a way to do this that is not the simple, obvious way. And everybody's going to go along with doing it that way. And then it doesn't work over and over and over again until finally somebody outside of the thing steps in and goes, you know, what you should have been doing all along was.
Or like in The Big Bang Theory, you know, when Robert got the robot, when Howard got the robot hand stuck on him, you know, and all they had to do was unplug it.
Yeah, it's the classic child. I'm going to figure this out without having to ask a parent. And my suppositions about the world and what is correct are completely skewed. / you know, adult male with his I'm gonna do this project around the house.
Well, to be fair, the reason why the kids didn't go to the grown-ups, because then they'd have to explain to the grown-ups what they were doing.
Yes, that is true. There is that problem.
They were trying to avoid telling adults so that way Scotty wasn't murdered by his parents, which is what they believed would happen.
Yes.
Children believe that their parents will literally murder them and just get another kid, like they would just just go to the store and get another kid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what you do, right? Your kid acts too bad, then you just go get another one from the kid store.
The things I would have said 10 years ago that I can't say today. So, Benny shows up to the Sandlot, and he's carrying a shoebox. And he takes out this pair of pristine-looking Converse sneakers. I believe it's Scotty is talking about their, I can't remember what he said, the kind of shoes they are, but he said they were guaranteed to make kids run faster and jump higher and, you know, do all these things.
Yeah, this definitely wasn't a commercial for Converse shoes at all.
Well, I mean, that was the big brand. Nike really wasn't a big brand, you know, in what was this, the 1950s?
Yeah. And that was the general advertisement / belief is that, these shoes will make me be better, right?
Right. I mean, that's the thing about shoes now, really. I mean,
yeah,
that's what they say.
That's all advertisement.
Right.
You know, the older I get, the more I realize the Rolling Stones really have everything pegged correctly. You know, because I can't get no satisfaction as a song about a man being bombarded by advertisements. Is if you really listen to the words, that is exactly what he's singing about. So like what the advertisements are telling him is he cannot be satisfied unless he buys their products.
Well, not to go down this rabbit hole, I'll just say at another time.
Oh, no, we're going down it.
I will look for, you know, commercials with the Rolling Stones in them, and then we can just talk about that, because I mean,
hey, look, it's really sad when people sell out, you know. I got kind of a headache though. You got anything for that?
Here, take two of these. Nuprin. Ah, Nuprin. Little yellow.
Different. Dressed head to toe in Pepsi gear.
I think this is Pat's way of saying at some point in the near future we'll be doing Wayne's World.
Yeah.
If you didn't get that reference.
Or advertising. One or the other. Now that our fan base is slowly growing, thank you for everybody who's sharing us.
So Benny puts on the shoes and he starts walking over towards the, first he walks over to like an abandoned scrapped car, because he's going to obviously hop the fence, and all of his friends telling him like, no, you don't have to do this. It's okay. It'll be fine. I'll just get in trouble. Scotty's like,
I don't want you to die, man.
Right. Right. It's a suicide. That he doesn't have to do it. He's like, yeah, no, I do have to do it. And then he hears the words that Babe Ruth told him. Remember, heroes get remembered, but legends never die.
Legends never die.
We begin. I don't know, the end of the hero's journey, like the climactic moment, the final battle.
Yeah.
So Benny hops over the fence. He's looking around, doesn't see anything. He thinks the coast is clear, of course. The ball's like right outside the beast's doghouse.
The beast.
The beast. Actually, the beast coughs it up and throws it out into like, it basically, it's like the no man's land in between them.
Yeah.
And he see the dog step out, and he's just staring at each other.
What steps out is not the puppet.
No, it's a real dog.
Yeah. And it's a big dog. Don't get me wrong. But it has nothing on that puppet. Those puppets.
Like a Pekingese or something. I don't know. It's one of the big breed dogs.
I thought it was like one of the Marmaduke.
It's not a Great Dane.
I'm not real sure. Dog lovers in our audience, tell us what kind of dog was in this movie, The Sandlot, and we will give you a free item of Pat and the Fat Man merch once we come out with Pat and the Fat Man merch. I'm sure it's coming. It's coming soon.
So it's kind of like a stare down, like in a Western movie, you know? And then the ball's in the middle, and they're going to play. Yeah. You know, you see Benny's getting his fingers, and you almost hear like a gunshot, like a starting gun. And then they both come towards each other. Benny gets the ball first, and the beast's chain is short enough to hold him down, hold him back for like a split second while Benny grabs the ball and then runs back towards the fence and hops over it. Except as he's doing that, the chain snaps and the beast jumps over the fence.
In slow-mo.
Right.
Everything's in slow-mo because that makes it cooler.
Benny jumps over, runs back to the guys, gives them the ball, and you know, they're all like, yeah, you got it. And then the dog comes right over the fence, right behind him.
Yeah.
And Betty's like, oh crap, and takes off running, because that's what you're supposed to do when a dog's chasing you, is take off running.
Yeah, that works.
Of course, it's a big dog, and you know, being an 8-year old, I can see why he would.
Well, yeah, I mean, they all run, they're all like,
actually Benny's the first takes off, the dog chases after Benny, and the rest just turn and look and are like, what the. So they're just watching Benny run off, and then they all go in after. We're like, oh crap, we gotta catch up, because you know, what are they gonna do? This is the dog they've been afraid of their whole lives.
Right, like they're watching the dog get further and further away, but then they realize so is Benny. And if they don't see what happens, then they're not going to get to see what happens. So they got to run too. Got to keep up. Got to keep up. Got to see if Benny gets killed by the dog.
So you see everybody leave the sandlot. And then next, the shot takes you inside a, not a real movie theater. It's like a community hall with a screen, and they're watching a movie. And then what movie is it? American Werewolf in Paris. Isn't that the original? Or is it London?
I think so. Yeah,
it's the original werewolf movie, because that's the irony of it. Talks about how to, and the scenes where the old gypsy talks about how you kill a werewolf. And then the chase goes back outside, they're running down the road.
Doesn't he like run through the screen?
Well, not yet.
Oh, okay. They're sorry. Getting, yeah,
because Benny's dodging cars and whatnot, you know, gets hit by an old lady in a car. Dog's still chasing him down an alleyway. And then finally, yeah, he takes a turn into this community center. He doesn't run through the screen, but they just run. He runs through the middle aisle, and the dog's just chasing right through. Right as they're talking about the werewolf, and so you know, everyone in the audience is going,
werewolf! It's just a dog. Werewolf! <Why?
laughs> Yeah, it's an auditorium. Yeah, it's like a community auditorium.
Yeah. It's not, it's like, I don't remember it being like a movie theater.
And the dog runs through the window.
To get out?
No, to get into.
To get into. That's right. Because Benny goes in through the door and closes the door behind him. But the dog finds his way through the window, because this is pre-air conditioning. And so people left windows open in order to get the breeze.
And the dog does run through the screen. How about that?
So Benny goes under it, right? He slides under the screen.
Yep.
So pulling off the solid baseball slide there, and then the dog goes right through it, right down the middle aisle.
And then as they're running out of the building, you see they're coming upon the Founders Day picnic, which they don't do that anymore, I don't think.
No, they still have a Founders Day in Rockwall.
Really?
Yeah. Founders Day, there's a parade and a big get-together thing and stuff happening in the square. Sometimes it's at the lake. It just depends where they want to have it. But yeah, it's still a thing at towns. Not all towns, of course, but yeah.
So almost like the chase scene during the 4th of July, Benny gets up and runs on top of one of the picnic tables. And of course, the dog gives chase.
Chase scene at 4th of July.
Yeah. Or is that this one with the cake?
Yeah, that's this one.
Yeah. 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 Because after he gets done.
Yeah. There's no chase scene at 4th of July. That's just them playing baseball.
I remember the fat kid shoving hot dogs.
Yeah. Thing. Just like. 10 or
the holiday thing kind of seemed together. Founders Day, 4th of July.
Okay.
I don't know how I have this gift. I have a gift whenever I pause. It's like the perfect pause. I paused it to see the dog running straight at the camera, mm-hmm. and his jowls are full flap open. It's like a demon monster mouth coming right at you. You know, nice. You want to scare your kid, you know, take a screenshot of that. Good night, son.
Let's put this on the wall here.
Is there a reason why I don't have children?
There's lots of reasons.
So yes, there is a cake here. They're bringing out this big cake for, you know, Founders Day picnic, and Benny jumps over the table and underneath the cake just barely as the bakers lift it up.
Yep.
And then they think they're closest clear, so they bring it back down. And then comes the dog, they lift that up, they're like, oh my god. And they miss on that one. So they think it's all over. They think they're safe.
Just when they let their guard down.
Then come the kids. And they lift it over the kids. And then they put it back down. Only this time, as the kids are running by, a guy in stilts, in like tall stilts, is walking by, and he gets turned around by the kids, falls down on the picnic table, launching the cake into the middle of the air and landing square on top of the bakers.
Yep.
And the funnier part is that they showed the cake going up in the air and doing like a somersault, staying perfectly together. And this is like a 5-tier cake. Yep, 5.
Yeah, hold on. Let me count it. 1, 2. Yeah, that's about 5. That's 5. 5, yeah.
The fat guy in me knew before the rest of my brain did.
Yeah, man, that checks out.
That checks out. This comic, almost like Caddyshack kind of comedy, you know, the cake does a perfect somersault stuck together, you know, yep. And then lands right on top of the bakers.
They didn't get away.
Actually, and then when you look at it, it's more of like the cake gets thrown on them. That's how it probably would have happened.
Right. That's how it was probably shot, you know, in real time.
We jump to a mother and a young child at the public pool. Mom's getting the kid all ready to go in the pool. And the kid goes, mommy, look, a doggy. Benny goes running past, the dog goes running past, and he goes, whoa, a big doggy.
The beast.
This is this huge chasing right through the pool that the kids aren't supposed to be there. So the rest of the gang sees it, stops, and Benny comes running past them, goes, get back to the sandlot, go. And so for whatever reason, Squints is like, quick, take the shortcut. Because, you know, for whatever reason, Benny's not taking the shortcut.
Yeah, he's going the long way for some reason with the dog hot on his tail.
So they come full circle back to the sandlot.
Yeah, it's very much one of those chase scenes like that is in any movie of this variety.
Like a Benny Hill.
Yeah. Reminds me of the Ferris Bueller's Day Off chase scene at the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You know.
I wonder if you could do that music to this scene. I wonder if someone's ever done that.
I bet it would work. I bet it would. Yeah.
Especially here towards the end, because Benny comes running around the backstop of the sandlot, and he's running down the field towards the fence, the outfield fence, and the beast grabs a hold of his shirt, and you're thinking, oh, no. Oh, no, the dog has got Benny. The beast has got Benny. And he runs and he runs and he runs and he leaps up and over the fence. And as he gets onto the other side, the dog leaps. And that's when he's on the other side. Oh, yeah, he busts through it. No, he doesn't leap through it. He was able to jump over it the first time when he was chained. Not this time.
Not this
he
time. Just
runs through it.
This time the beast is going through the fence. He's going to beast that fence down.
Benny on the other side runs over to the beast house. And then as the beast comes through the fence, he's just standing there for whatever reason. And the fence just comes toppling right on top of the beast. That poor dog. Because, you know, that thing survived 2 jumps from a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, that's probably about
he's
right.
Probably got to be. Yeah, I was going to say he's much older than the rest of these kids. Yeah,
older than Smalls, because Smalls is like the smallest out of all of them. Right. He's, you know, about 10, I think we established.
He's not the smallest.
I thought he was.
No.
Okay.
No, there's a couple of kids smaller than him.
He's on the lower end.
So then as the dust settles and you think, oh no, the beast has been vanquished. We are the victors. And the poor dog just lying there. He's not a big old mean beast.
Yep.
He's just a dog. He's
just a dog.
Aww. So of course, Scotty being the bleeding heart of the group is like, we got to help me get the fence off of him. The other kids are like,
are you crazy? The beast is going to eat us if we take the fence off of him.
So, you know, Scotty's struggling to lift the fence all by himself and he's begging them all, please, please. Of course, you know, pleads to Benny, and Benny being the white knight of this story, you know, kind of just, you know, rolls his eyes like, ah, fine. Comes over and helps lift it up.
10 minutes trying to outrun this thing that was trying to kill me, but I guess I'll help it.
Ruin my nice jersey. And so they lift the fence up and the beast comes out from the fence and stares Scotty right in the face, and you're thinking, oh god. Big dog staring at this kid right in the face.
Yeah.
What does he do? He licks his face. He's a good boy.
Yeah, he's a dog. He's not a monster. He's a dog. Joy's playing fetch.
Sure, there was at least a 5-second, you know, pure terror as the dog comes in close for the licking.
Yep. just the like stunned look on Scotty's face, just like, what? Like, that is almost, that's far more stunning than if I had been eaten just now. If I had been eaten, that would have made sense. But what just happened did not make sense. And
plus, we don't know how awful smelling that dog's breath would have been.
Well, I'm going to guess terrible, but it's not like
little. I'm going to guess terrible, too, because I got a small dog. And
kids don't care about that kind of stuff.
Oh no, Scotty's kind of a sissy. I think he might.
I doubt it. Kids don't notice smells until they're older. It's all just smell to them. It's not bad or good.
The dog finishes licking Scotty, and then walks around behind this. It's not another fence. It's just kind of like a wall, like an outcropping wall kind of thing, kind of like a hiding spot. And you come to find out, all of the baseballs that those kids have hit over the fence are all nicely put inside this hole.
Yeah.
This pit.
It's basically this treasure trove of baseballs that they've hit into this man's backyard over the course of who knows how many years, 5, 20, right. Who knows, however long people have been playing at the Sandlot.
And all the kids are looking like, holy crap, we got enough baseballs to last us forever.
Especially now that there's no fence to hit them behind. And the beast isn't going to kill us. Yeah, so they slay the dragon, then help the dragon up, befriend the dragon, find the dragon's treasure, all told through a children's baseball story.
Right. That the beast really wasn't, that the monster really wasn't a monster.
Yep.
It was misunderstood.
Just like King Kong.
Smaug was misunderstood.
Yeah, no, Smaug was not. He was a jerk. Leonard Nimoy was a jerk. No, wait, Smaug. Smaug was a jerk. Leonard Nimoy, not Smaug. You don't tell me what to believe. If I want to think Leonard Nimoy was Smaug, I'm going to do that. Okay, Billy. Whatever you say.
Then we jump ahead to Scotty taking the dog back to the owner. And I say taking back to, because he's like holding him by the collar and bringing him to the back porch. The back porch, mind you, not the front door. He's not going to knock on the front door so the guy knows. He's going to knock on the guy's back door porch. So, I mean, if it were me going, what the hell? I got a fenced in yard. How's somebody knocking on my back door?
Well, I have to imagine that if my fence collapsed, that I would hear it.
You would think too. I was just ignoring that because of the, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm just saying.
I'm picking and choosing here.
Especially given James Earl Jones' character's lack of eyesight. He's supposed to have daredevil hearing.
Well, way to spoil it. I was going to say, out comes, who do you know comes out? But Darth Vader himself, James Earl Jones.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert. when did this come out in the 90s? 30-year-old movie?
Just trying to put a little theatrical flair here. Okay, for you.
Well.
It's ruined.
Really? All right. Do your thing, Bruce. I'll stop interrupting.
Well, it's too late now.
Theatrical flair, buddy.
I didn't interrupt you earlier. I thank you to extend the same courtesy to me.
All right, fine. I mean, this is a recording. We could just record it again. It's not live. I mean, we could do it again. You want your dramatic entrance for Darth Vader? We could do it. We could do it for Mufasa. We could do it for anybody. I mean, this is CNN.
So yeah, knock on the door. It comes out. Darth Vader himself, James Earl Jones. And he's looking around. He's wearing black sunglasses, just dark. You know, you can't see through him kind of sunglasses. And then it pans to the rest of the Sandlot gang going, this is bad. This is very bad. Scotty somehow finding the courage to not wet himself and speak at the same time.
It's a real improvement for Scotty. It's the high point, really, of his heroic journey. Well, no, the coming scene is the high point.
This guy goes, we brought your dog home. And James Earl Jones goes, Hercules, how do you get out? And the rest of the gang's like, telling you guys, we should have turned it loose.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that dog, I mean, he was a real, like, if he wanted to run away, he would have ran away. He wouldn't have chased after Benny the whole time.
Yeah, no, he would have gone.
He would have just gone the other direction. Yeah. I'm free.
Yeah.
And so the kids are trying to explain to him, well, you know, the dog got out because we were trying to get a baseball back that we hid into your backyard. And so James Earl Jones goes, so you're the ones making all that racket. And it's like, you say that, but you didn't exactly come out to find out what was going on, old man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because you gotta think about, like, all of the different schemes they hatch to try and get the ball back. None of them are quiet schemes. In fact, one of them involved a series of exploding vacuum cleaners. At some point, as a homeowner, with all of that noise coming from your backyard, you figure you'd go see what was going on.
Never mind the rest of the neighborhood.
Yes. Yes. Like,
no cops showed up or anything, you know?
Yeah, we keep to ourselves mostly.
This is America. We mind our own business around these parts.
We are our own dang business.
He goes, you got the ball? You're like, yeah, sure. And they hand him, you know, the mangled up ball with the autograph on it. And he goes, well, it was the first time anybody got the best of old Hercules, the name of the beast.
Yeah.
We've come to find out.
Also, I might add that this man James Earl Jones is playing is not the same man from the story.
Right.
Very different individual.
If you didn't know.
Very different.
Now who's spoiling a 30-year-old movie?
Yeah, I always found that kind of, like, odd. I don't know, or weird. Like, that they were different people from the start. I don't know. I always,
like, why was that necessary? Because, I mean, it's James Earl Jones. He could have played
right
five parts of this movie and still would have done it, you know?
Yeah, so I always thought that was kind of weird.
Maybe it's all they could afford was this scene for him. They're like, oh crap,
yeah.
We didn't think this through. We need, you know, we need someone to play this guy again.
Yeah,
we ran all of our budget out already.
On the other hand, it's possible that they were trying to get into, like, the you know, classic children's tales, you know, are basically wrong about everything. And so,
well, yeah,
there's potentially that aspect of it.
Well, after he says no one's ever gotten the best of old Hercules, what does he say there, Pat?
Let's just come knock on my front door and ask me to get it back.
And so at this point, the rest of the gang is beating up on Squints.
Yeah. Told you.
And of course, his defense was, well, we got the ball back, didn't we?
Yes. Another group dynamic here, because it's like, they were all bought in on the story, right? And the minute they're both wrong, and they could have gotten all their balls back over the entirety of that time, it's all Squints' fault. he's the one who convinced us into this. It's his fault.
Like, we could have been killed. He goes, well, we got the ball back, didn't we? We got
the ball back, didn't we? So very Squints.
So after James Earl Jones is done laughing at the kids and their I'm just gonna say it, stupidity.
Yeah.
He invites small white children into a blind black man's house.
Okay. Why you gotta put it that way, Bruce? Why you gotta put it that way? What is wrong with you?
You tell me that that's not a story back in the day. That if somebody writes that in the paper, there's gonna be some problems.
No, you're like 100% right on that one. Hey, I hadn't thought about that.
Especially one that has a history of having a dog that's supposedly dangerous.
Yeah.
And runs basically a junkyard backyard.
An old blind black man invites a group of small white children into his home.
And I say this because, like, as a kid, never occurred to me. Like, it no. just
nope. Nope.
Nope. The old man didn't, you know, yell at them, scream at them, or, you know, get them in trouble or anything. Yeah. He was trying to play it cool. So, you know, when I was younger, like, oh, this, you know, they're not going to die. So let's see what happens. But now as an adult, when you look back on kids' movies, you're like, huh, I wonder if I should explain some of this to kids, you know, yeah. when this is over.
If you get invited into a to another adult's house, don't just go in.
When they step inside and they go into this guy's den, it's a room just full of baseball memorabilia. All sorts of black and white pictures of baseball players and memorabilia, pennants and baseball, what they called back then arcade games. They're like little like pachinko kind of games and things like that. So this guy was obviously a baseball fan. So as they're standing there, James Earl Jones, like, how, for some reason, like, it's like just smelling the ball is telling him, you know, the story of this baseball that the kid's going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Dog slobber. Yeah, that's the smell of trouble, baby.
Oh, leather. Ah, dog slobber. Oh, there's a little bit of ink there. Yeah, that's some twine. Yeah, this was a signed baseball, wasn't it? You're kids.
Right, and that's basically what he says. You're in trouble, aren't you? He goes, yeah. I, you know, Scotty's like, yeah, I took it without permission. It was my stepdad's. I took it without asking. It was signed by Babe Ruth. And of course, this gentleman, this old man goes, George signed it, as if, like, you know, talking about an old friend, like, you know, saying by his first name. And he goes, I take it back. You're not in trouble. You're dead where you stand. Because he knows. He's like, yeah. Yeah, okay. Now I know the trouble you're in.
No, you're not in trouble. You're dead where you... And if you hear "you're dead where you stand" from Darth Vader's voice, you know it's true. You're dead where you stand.
And so he puts the baseball down on the table, goes to a cabinet, and then you just see him just feeling in there for a particular baseball. So you can just assume that he knows where each baseball is and what each baseball was signed. And he gives it over to Scotty. And he goes, here, I'll trade you. And Benny thinks that, you know, he's trying to pull a fast one on him. And he goes, that's really nice of you, but that ball really is signed by Babe Ruth. And the old man goes, so is this one, along with all the other 1927 Yankees. So if you're not familiar with baseball memorabilia and its value, there's a give and take here with autographs. Having an entire team's ball signed from a particular year could be very valuable, but having a single player also sign another ball just by itself can be even more valuable because there's nothing else there but that signature. So it can be preserved, you know, better. And then you're not cluttering it with other signatures. So it's give or take, you know, all sports memorabilia is give and take with its particular value. In this particular case, yes, a solo autograph of Babe Ruth is way more valuable than the autograph of the entire 1927 Yankees. Not to say that it's not valuable. It's just not as valuable as just the autograph of Babe Ruth.
Yeah. Depending on where you go, a signed Babe Ruth ball with papers to go along with it could run anywhere from $300 at the low end to over $260,000 on the high end. What was the year for the Yankees?
1927.
That goes around the same range. Mm-hmm. It's slightly more rare just because as a team, they sign fewer of those balls. But it also includes Babe Ruth's signature. So,
well, that being said, that's just by going off of, like, you know, a search and a reference there. But you got to imagine these things, most of these things aren't just bought into like a sale house or something like that. They're auctioned.
Yeah.
Usually. And so therefore the value generally gets greatly more increased because collectors tend to overspend money.
Yeah.
They're usually people who, you know, that's how they're spending their money. They're like, I got too much money, so how am I going to use it?
Yeah, a lot of this kind of stuff ends up in a charity auction of some kind, and people are more likely to spend lots of money at charity auctions because it's a charity. And then, yeah, collectors. Collectors are always trying to fill out their collection.
I can't remember. Something was recently bought. It was movie, TV memorabilia, like a stupid amount of money recently.
Yeah.
you know, the kids are looking at like, oh my God, you know, Lou Gehrig and, you know, Babe Ruth and all the Murderer Rose guy, you know, that was the name of the group of Yankees that, you know, were just the best, you know, at the time. And they were all the Yankees, all on the same team. And they were just called Murderer's Row because just one after the other would get a hit, get a home run, something like that.
It's a pitcher coming up against that lineup was murder, basically. or they were going to murder you as a pitcher. Either way, however you wanted to look at it, it was going to be a rough day.
So they're looking at the spawn. They're like, well, why would you trade us, you know, for that shoot up ball, you know? And the old man's like, well, I got plenty of baseball stuff. Look at all that. I don't need this one. And it sounds like you need it more than I do.
Yeah.
Just true. So they're looking at through all of his stuff and looking at the pictures. And through one of them, they see the old man, a younger version of that old man, standing next to Babe Ruth. And they're like, whoa, you knew Babe Ruth? He goes, George? Yeah. And he knew me.
Highlighting the fact that he knows him by first name.
And of course, he says he was almost as great a hitter as I was.
Typical sports bluster.
I would have beaten his record, too. But, and the kid finishes it, you know, you went blind. And the old man was telling the story how he was standing in the batter's box and the way he was standing and swinging took the strike zone away and, it, you know, peeved the pitcher off, which does sometimes. And he goes, of course, you know, this was a time in baseball where you didn't wear a helmet. Wore your baseball cap, which, you know, obviously no protection whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so the pitcher threw a high fastball, what they say inside, which is to say at the batter,
closer to the batter,
hit the old man in the head with a fastball straight to the temple, and he went blind, which has been known to happen in baseball.
Yeah. I mean, people have been killed by wild pitches. It has happened. Not often. Very rare, especially now in the heydays of helmets. But back in the day.
Well, I'm pretty sure the story that in that show, Brockmire, when he tells the story about the guy from the Cleveland Indians.
Oh, it's true.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I was going to say that happened.
Yeah, he died.
And right on the field, right at that moment.
Yep. It was the bottom of the eighth.
Bam.
Yeah. Just night game. Hard to see. Basically had washed out vision.
So he tells the story and he goes, you know, and this guy's like, well, I still don't feel right taking this ball. So the old man goes, I'll make you a deal. You come over once a week to talk baseball with me and we'll call it even. Of course, they agree.
Because why wouldn't they?
Right. Because why wouldn't they?
You talk to a guy who knew like our idol, basically. You get to hang out with a guy who knew the Babe Ruth, the Babe, and we can talk to him about him.
Right. So the next scene is Scotty standing in front of his house, handing the wrapped up, chewed up Babe Ruth ball back to his stepdad Bill and then handing him that ball and then handing him the other one that's signed by the rest of the Yankees. And older Scotty's narrating said even though Bill loved the Murderer's Row ball, he was still plenty mad, and so, you know, he didn't act too harshly, just suspended or grounded me for a week, which honestly that is getting off pretty light.
yeah you know, scene rapidly cuts away as Scotty's stepdad raises his hand in backhand fashion.
That doesn't happen.
Who is the backer again? I can't remember his name all of a sudden.
Dennis Leary.
That's right. Dennis Leary balls his fist up and reaches back to lay one in on Scotty. Scene cuts away. Just 1 week being grounded, which is honestly really, really lenient.
He goes on to say that, you know, from that point on, he didn't have any trouble calling Bill Dad. And it goes to a scene of the two of them playing catch successfully this time.
Yeah. And, someone else did your job. Yay. While you were away. Oh, I'm sorry. Dennis Leary. Bill's a bad father. I'm just going to say it.
And so we go into the monologue of kind of the epilogue monologue, which is say he talks about how summers came and went, but none of them were as good as that first one, the gang at the Sandlot. You know, so when one guy would move away, we would never replace him on the team with anybody else. We would just rotate and kept the game going.
wants to rule the world. So sad we almost made it. So. Wants to rule the world. Now keep going. It's got to go during the song. What happened to all the people? That's the end of the song.
Talks about how it was weird that Benny Don't called Babe Ruth the Hercules of baseball and that the beast's name turned out to be Hercules. So we ended up making him part of the mascot. None of us could ever figure out what that meant, but we were all amazed by it. You know, I kept in touch with the guys over the years, and he starts talking about how each kid had went on to do something, that Yaya's parents shipped him off to military school.
Yeah, so for any filmmakers out there who are wanting to make a film, this is solid gold epilogue.
Like, yes,
it's tough to get better than this. This is how you do one of these stories epilogues,
right? And I mean, like, in the end, it was kind of great. Like, say for like Animal House had a great ending like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know.
John Hughes ending.
Yeah, John Hughes ending.
Yeah.
So talk about his parents shipped him off to military school, and after the army became one of the pioneer developers of bungee jumping. Which is funny, because he was the one that was in the sling thing, you know, they lift him over the wall to grab the thing and
everybody wants to rule.
Bertram got really into the 60s. He was the kid with the glasses that gave him the chewing tobacco.
Yeah. Is that older, a taller kid, not quite as tall as Benny, but the kind of, that kid. Shocking. He's the one that gets them the contraband, right? Gets really into the 60s.
He got really into the 60s and was never seen again.
Was never seen again.
Timmy and Tommy, the brothers, became an architect and a contractor, and would later go on to invent the mini mall.
The mini mall.
Squints grew up and married Wendy Peppercorn.
Yeah, that's the funniest one by far.
And ended up having 9 kids.
9 kids. And that one is played with the scene where, like, isn't he like on the street and she's walking by, like, shaking her head at him or something? Or I can't remember.
No, it was just each kid making up, like, throwing the ball at the sandlot, and then they would just fade away.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's done so well. Such good cinematography on this one.
And then they go on to say that he goes on to buy the local drugstore, and that him and Wendy own it to this day. Hammy Hamilton Porter became a professional wrestler.
Yep.
It's known as the Great Hambino.
Great Hambino.
De Nunez, the African-American kid.
The pitcher.
Played AAA ball.
Yeah.
But never got to the show. He owns a business now, and he coaches a little league team that his sons play on, called the Heaters.
The Heaters, yeah. Throw him the heater.
And they said that Hercules lived to be 199 years old in dog years.
In dog years, which is still pretty old.
Divide by 7. Somebody do quick math on that. But
I mean, it's older than 19, right?
Right. 59, so it'd be like 28, almost 30 years old.
That's an old dog.
That's an old dog.
That's like, old dog.
I mean, I don't know how the last 5 years of that dog's life were, but I guarantee you it probably wasn't moving much.
Nope.
Like, that's like Nosferatu dog.
Good old Hercules. Nosferatu dog.
Tell me I'm wrong.
What an image.
Of course, Scotty says that he was the last one to move away, but when he did, the sandlot was still there. After Benny pickled the beast, his reputation spread all over. From then on, he was known as Benny the Jet Rodriguez, and that the name stuck with him the rest of his life. So then we fade from the scene on the sandlot and everyone moving on and fading away back to where we started the movie, back at the baseball stadium. Growing up, Benny is on third base. And of course, Scotty's narrating, still wearing the fisherman's ball cap,
yep.
The original one from when he was a kid. I don't know how that's still.
he defied the instructions to burn it. He kept it, kept the ball cap, the fisherman's ball cap.
And so he's there, and he's so Scotty's commentating on it, and of course what happens here is Benny gets the chance and he steals home, because of course he does. That's how the story's gonna go,
because he's Benny the Jet Rodriguez.
And of course he successfully steals home base, and when he gets up to dust himself off, and after he's done getting high-fived and congratulated by the rest of his team, Benny looks up and gives a thumbs up to Scotty, and Scotty gives him a thumbs up back, and that's our story.
And that is The Sandlot. So, no ending scene from this movie, since it hadn't become super popular yet. So that's it. Rolls into credits.
Yep.
Final thoughts of the Fat Man.
This is a very classic baseball game. I think this is the quintessential family baseball game, or baseball movie. Sorry, baseball game. Baseball movie. You know, everyone should watch Bull Durham and A Field of Dreams and A League of Their Own. But this movie is one that should be watched by the family. You know, moms and dads watching it with kids at the beginning of summer, or when they start Little League or something like that. It should be about letting kids know that your parents used to be kids and did stuff like this, and that, you know, them as kids should be doing stuff like this. And through enjoying time with other people and making friends, that you do it through the game of baseball. Because there's nothing more summer, there's nothing more American than baseball. And it's a kids movie, but it's not an overly kids movie. And I don't think, and then there's a lot of things that I don't think that when you look back, you go, oh boy, I can't believe I didn't see that as a kid. We make jokes about it here, but really it's nothing terrible.
Yeah, it's not like when you watch Spaceballs as an adult or anything by Mel Brooks as an adult, and you're like, whoa, I had a lot of stuff went right over my head.
Right.
Yeah. Any of the stuff they used to play on TV that we would just catch on a Saturday.
Right. But, you know, it's a very well done movie. And really, well, there's, I would say, two big actors casted, and one not as, I wouldn't say she's a big actress, but I mean, we know her because we're big fans of Indiana Jones, was cast in it.
Yeah.
So there's not like a whole lot of star power to overshadow anything. You get to just enjoy the movie.
Yeah. Good movie. Family friendly. Has a couple of questionable scenes, of course, that should spark conversation. But that's always a good thing, to talk about that kind of stuff. And it has a little bit of language, you know, but I think that mirrors reality. I think a lot of little kids, I'm not say little kids, but a lot of fifth and sixth and seventh graders use language they probably shouldn't.
The secret world of,
yeah, when they're not around adults. So you know, I've always loved The Sandlot. I've always enjoyed watching it. I still will always enjoy watching it. It's been interesting kind of analyzing things as we've gone. Overall, great movie. And I think that wraps it up. Finally got through.
We finally did it, folks. Yes, a year later we did it.
Yeah, we did it. So we're going to put out our next set of surveys, both to the Patreons and to the Facebook, for open to fans, what movies you guys would like us to review. I don't think we've picked a theme for this year. Last year's themes were 80s dystopian, or not 80s, but dystopian movies, which somehow ended up being Escape from New York. Just still blows my mind. That's what won. and then baseball movies. So we'll come up with some different choices this time. Maybe we'll make a triumphant return to science fiction, since that was our starting thing. Maybe we'll finally do Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
The 20 episodes that'll take.
For those of you who never heard, in some of our older podcasts, we did try and do that movie. We recorded one episode 4 times. It was literally just the conference room scene. And the first time we recorded it, we took 5 minutes to talk about that scene, and then we added 5 minutes every. So by the fourth time we recorded that episode, we talked about that scene for 20 solid minutes. There's That scene takes like 4 minutes and 20 seconds. We talked about it for 20 minutes. We realized we were on average recording 4 minutes of us talking about every 1 minute of movie. And because we lost so much of our audio due to problems with our recording apps at the time, we just gave up. We were like, you know, we got to move on. We got to do something else. We're killing ourselves here. So when we finally do it, when we do A New Hope, expect it to take the whole year. Yeah, that's what it'll be.
A New Hope.
You figure 2 episodes a month. That's about right.
And that's just A New Hope.
we haven't even gotten to Empire, which I think that's my favorite. I don't know if that's your favorite, Bruce, but
yeah.
All right. So thank you again for joining us for The Sandlot. We loved having you join us. Remember to highly rate our podcast on whatever podcast system you're listening to it. Share us with your friends and family and everyone you meet. We love it when you share us on social media, but we also love it when you talk about it, because word of mouth tends to be still one of the A number ways that podcasts spread. So
yes,
when I say talk about it to your friends and loved ones and everyone you meet on the street, I am being 100% serious. If you happen to be listening to this podcast and you'd like to sponsor us or advertise on the podcast, we are open to that. We do have a pretty good listener base these days. We also, at the same time, we promise to our listener base that we will not make advertising cumbersome and terrible for you, because there's plenty of podcasts out there. Every one of them from the Pushpin Network is just bleeping awful. It's 2 minutes of advertisement for every 4 minutes of podcast. They great content, but you know, it's not listenable to because of the advertisements. We will never do that to our fans. We enjoy talking too much to let it get taken up by advertisements.
or at the very least, if we do it, there's going to be some mocking in there. It's just, you know,
it's going to be Wayne's World version advertising. That's how we're going to roll on this one. So we do appreciate you listening. If you'd like to support the podcast, Patreon, Pat the Fat Man, go to the website, click on the Patreon button, you become a patron. For as little as $1 a month, you get access to all of our extra content that's on Patreon. Occasionally, we will release a Patreon or a patron episode here on the main podcast so you can see what you're missing out on. We think $1 a month is pretty fair, to be honest. And it helps us pay our editor. All the money from that goes to our editor. So for those of you who are patrons, thank you very much for your patronage. We love you.
Yes, thank you.
Check us out on Facebook, Pat the Fat Man, Instagram, Pat the Fat Man, and Twitter, at the Fat Man 1238.
Yep.
This has been Pat the Fat Man. I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Rainbow.
It'll be okay. I'll just die at the hands of my abusive stepfather. Wait a long awkward pause after I said that. Let's get the longest, most awkward pause I possibly can.
I was just making sure you were done.
After pantomiming Scotty Smalls saying abusive stepfather. Wow.